the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the world's greatest podcast. We've got to change that open because the definitive is not like enough.
Not enough.
It's got to be the world's greatest podcast. In fact, it should be the world's greatest podcast known as Courtside because that's what it is. No doubt about it. Would you agree?
Strong. Well, all right, what do you got? Let's go.
All right, D-Squared, here we go. You know what? I read an article the other day, and the guy Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-12, you know, he said that, you know, not being in the college football playoffs is really hurting the Pac-12 and all that jazz. Not that I'm exactly, you know, I understand Oregon, I understand Utah. But let me tell you something. Hey, Larry Scott, if you're paying attention, you should be listening to Courtside, because I'm going to help your league right now. I'm going to help the identity of your league, and it's real simple. All right. You have an unbalanced schedule as it is. All right. Take the time, write up an invitation and send it to Gonzaga, because Gonzaga belongs in the Pac-12. You want to fix your identity crisis? It's real simple. Put Gonzaga in your league. Here's a couple things. You say, well, how can that be done? I mean, Gonzaga doesn't play football. You know what? Notre Dame is in the ACC. They don't play football in the ACC, but they're in the ACC. Connecticut's going to the Big East. You know what? The Big East doesn't play football, but Connecticut's going to go play basketball in the Big East. Here's the deal. You want to help your brand? That will help your brand. First of all, they're 3-0 against your league right now. Forget about that. You talk about a team that has a brand and a following and an identity that will create excitement, create enthusiasm, help the rest of the teams in your program. They have natural rivalries. They're in your geographic footprint. So Larry Scott, in that fancy office you have in Northern California, and that television station you have, you want to help yourself? Listen to me. Gonzaga belongs in the Pac-12. It makes sense. It makes money. It will help your image. It will help your brand. You are welcome. Your take.
Wow. Strong. And I like it. It makes sense. At first, my initial reaction was exactly what you answered. Wait, so what are you talking about? They don't play football, but they don't. Now I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate. Notre Dame isn't really in the ACC for football. They play and have an agreement with the ACC to play ACC schools. However, UConn is doing exactly what you said, which is play one sport but not the other, not the football element. I love it. Seth, I think if you're Larry Scott and you're sitting here looking at all these teams – going to football Final Fours, basketball Final Fours, and you are on the outside constantly looking in. A shakeup needs to be made. Bobby Hurley bitching about, you know, announcers on Pac-12 Network isn't the thing. It's add somebody like Gonzaga. I love it, Seth. I think Gonzaga would probably go for it. Wouldn't you?
Oh, in a New York minute. I'll tell you what, think about the other sports. I think Gonzaga is really good in soccer. Women's basketball, they're excellent in. I don't know where they are in baseball. But here's the deal. It fits your geographic footprint. Everyone says, well, what are they going to do with scheduling? They're adding another team. There's an unbalanced schedule already. It makes no difference. It's not like it's true travel partners like in the old days of the Pac-10 or the Pac-8. All right now, you know what? Your schedule changes each and every year. This is common sense. This is fiscally responsible. It helps the image, the brand, the identity of your league. It creates an excitement and enthusiasm about your conference. This is to me a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer for Gonzaga. It's a no-brainer for the league. It helps your, let's face it, it really, really raises the profile of basketball. And I think Washington would welcome it. Look, you know, Mark Few and Mike Hopkins have a good relationship. They're playing that game already. They played Arizona the other day. I mean, it's not like they're not playing teams in this conference. And I just think it's a common sense thing. You want to know what everyone does, what's in their best interest. Well, you know, it's in Gonzaga's best interest, and it's also in the Pac-12's best interest. So that's my first take. Here's my next take, though. See, I'm full of takes today.
Yeah. You know,
too much free time. Too much free time.
All right, FranCon zero. We're at FranCon zero, people. Go ahead.
I would be disappointed, but I would not be shocked if Cole Anthony shuts it down. Right now, if you look at it, they say it's a long term. They're not sure. Does he need surgery? Are they going to rehab it? Cole Anthony started the season at 34 against Notre Dame. He was the talk of the town. All right. But since then, North Carolina struggled. Cole Anthony struggled. He's beat up. Greg Anthony obviously was a terrific player and won a national championship at UNLV. He was a longtime NBA player. He understands the business of basketball. We've seen Darius Garland last year get injured and still not impact his draft position. We saw it with Kyrie Irving. If you are advising Cole Anthony and you really understand the business of college basketball, and again, I hope this does not happen, but I can see, he missed a bunch of games in his high school career at Oak Hill Academy. I can see them saying, wait a second. It's not like I took this tour with my team in Canada, like, Zion Williamson. It's not like this team right now, is my gut feeling, is not a Final Four, Elite Eight type team. There's so much pressure on him to do so much that the more he tries, the less he does. It wouldn't be good for college basketball, but my gut feeling, and I'm not saying this will happen, but my gut feeling is Cole Anthony shuts it down.
Well, I think if he wants to maintain his draft position, which apparently is in the top five, he better shut it down, because it ain't getting better, and it's not going to get better with an injury. And it would be sad for college basketball that that's the way we go about it. And it's weird for college basketball that Darius Garland ended up, being a lottery pick, and Cole Anthony will be a lottery pick after really neither one showed what, I guess Cole Anthony reminds me of Omar Cook. I remember when Omar Cook of St. John's went off in the Garden and our good friend Dickie V went nuts and talked about how he's the greatest thing, blah, 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 blah. And then Omar Cook became what Omar Cook was, which was a nice player. And that's where I see Anthony. I think the thing in college basketball now, Seth, is to shut it down. Probably the prudent thing in college basketball right now is to shut it down. I guess if you're looking for your future, if you want to be, an NBA draft choice and the millions are there. So it would not surprise. It saddened me because I hate that that's what this world of college and professional basketball has become, but that's just the reality.
Here's the deal, Dan. I mean, and it is terrible, but guys are going overseas. Guys are blown mm-hmm. off their freshman year in college to make some money overseas. Let's really put it on the table. If guys could come out of high school, and a guy like Cole Anthony, he would have tried to come out of high school. So now if you have a guy like Cole Anthony, who's that talented, all right, and who's that hyped up, and he's in the lottery, one, would you risk more injury? Number two, would you risk getting exposed? Your dad is a very good player in the NBA, a terrific college player who understands the business. Our game has totally changed. The culture of our game has totally changed. Everyone wants how quick they can get there, faster phone, but how quick can you get to the NBA? I mean, everyone talks about the league and the green room guys and we're projecting guys. And like, let me ask you this. If he was playing over in Europe and he got banged up, what would they do? And he was had a chance to come out in the NBA. They'd shut him down.
May I give you one rant?
Yes, I love your – is it a Colts rant or just
– No. This is a basketball rant that happened last night. The Chicago Bulls last night, and this involves both North Carolina player Kobe White and Duke player Wendell, whatever the hell his name is, Carter. They blow a 26-point lead. They lose to a bad team, the OKC Thunder. The game is not 2 minutes over, and there is Wendell Carter, junior, senior, whatever the hell his name is, and Kobe White laughing, both on the Bulls, can't wait to get with Dwayne Wade and take a picture and do all that stuff. It drives me nuts. Here's my problem with sports these days. People actually think that sports is the same as entertainment. And it's not. Sports is competitive. Sports is every freaking day. Sports, when you lose by nature, you have to suffer. And I tell you this, it'd be hard for me, and I love covering the NBA, but it'd be hard for me to pay or recommend anybody buy a ticket to something like that. And I see it all the time in the NFL. I honestly believe that the worst thing about sports these days is that players legitimately don't care. Now, I'm not saying they don't care if they lose the finals, but I'm saying they legitimately across the board care less than they care more. And it drives me nuts. I saw Romeo Langford last year, literally after a loss, losses in his uniform, 3 minutes after the game, literally 3 to 5 minutes after the game was over, up in the stands with his mom and dad laughing, giggling, blah, 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 blah. I'm telling you, this hug it out with players, this you got to love them up, is affecting sport, and it's not good. It's not going to be good for ticket sales. It's not going to be good for viewing. People are eventually going to say, the hell with this. Let me go watch the MMA where they have to care. What I saw last night out of Wendell Carter Jr. and Colby White was absolutely sickening to me. Yes, get off my lawn. Yes, I'm boomer, but I have a name for those of you that call us boomer. I call you a bleeder. And the truth of the matter is, it's disgust. It's sick, and it's not going to stop. And away we go.
Part of that, I think, is here's the deal: if a guy puts up numbers, he's going to get paid whether he's on a win, he's a winner or a loser.
Right.
So I think the deal is, and quite honestly, some of the people that are putting teams together, if we really want to go outside the box, are so into the quote unquote analytics of it all that it's great. Numbers are one thing. You know, understanding of putting together a locker room, a winning culture, got competitive guys that are more about the team than themselves, that's a little different. And, you know, that's why do we see like certain organizations continually win? Because maybe the guys that are running those organizations understand team. Why do the Miami Heat continually stay competitive and find guys that other people didn't think could play? All right. And now, you know, look what they're doing. Why do San Antonio, even though they're down this year, and look, yeah, they had Robinson and they had Duncan, they had Ginobili. But they found, you know what? They found winning players. And they found guys that were going to give up a little bit of themselves to win. That winning was important. And right now, whether it's a byproduct of playing 8,000 games when they were kids in youth basketball, I don't call it grassroots basketball, whether it's just the way our society is, it's an issue. And I agree with you. But, and then you find, people that just want to, you know, take shots at the coaches, which is a total another.
Well, coaches care. I mean, look, there's no way Jim Boylan last night was giggling after the game. I get tired of all that. I get tired of, you know, you guys are just two old men. But no, the truth of the matter is, in my world, at least I feel like I'm going to try to protect a sport from itself, and this whole notion of you got to hug it out with everybody is nonsensical. So let me ask you this. All right. Big news today. Miles Powell out indefinitely with a concussion. And oh, by the way, I did the Iowa State. Not very good. And if Seton Hall can't beat Iowa State, I don't know, man. Anyway, does Miles Powell shut it down?
No, I don't think that kid's a fiercely competitive kid. They said that he didn't even know where he was. He thought they were on the way to Rutgers for practice after the game.
Yeah.
That he literally was like, not, like, I look at Miles Powell differently. I look at Miles Powell, as a guy that just loves ball. And then that's the difference. Can you get lost in the game? Can you literally get lost in competing and what it takes to win and your teammates and the whole drive it takes to win. And I'm not sure. And look, there are guys that love the game, that work their tails off, that are great teammates, that are, look, I look at John Morant. That dude plays every day like, you know, like it's the last game he's ever going to play. There are guys out there that winning's important. We do have, a situation in NBA and college basketball, more in the NBA right now, where it's the money is so insane that, you know, look, you got another game the next day. It is 82 games. And as long as you put up numbers, you're going to have value to someone. But the problem is that the people that are putting together teams are more concerned with the number than the value. And there's a big difference between the number and the value, because people can put up numbers and not have value in terms of being winning players. And you see it each and every year. I mean, you look at the Sacramento Kings. and I don't want to get too deep into it, but I mean, like, you know, they continue to have draft choices and they continue to lose. Well, then, you know,
we saw it from the Clippers forever.
Yeah, sure. So the Clippers forever. All right. So we've solved a lot of
those
problems solved, which is why we are the world's greatest podcast. And that's why you tune in to get this type of information. There's no doubt about it. College basketball, just in general, like, all right, so you got Kansas number one, Ohio State loses. But I want to get into something a little deeper, and I want your opinion on it. There was an article in Detroit on Cassius Winston, Michigan State, and everything they've been through this year. And it really moved me. And basically, it documented kind of what Cassius is going through, how he's at times he's lost his love for the game. That was his thing, you know, obviously with losing his brother. I can't imagine, and this is me, I just can't imagine how that Michigan State team is functioning. And I'll tell you why, because, you know, one thing about Michigan State is they're a close-knit group, and people will look at Tom and see him screaming and yelling and going crazy. He coaches those guys hard and he loves them harder. And he's demanding on him, but as demanding on him and as frustrated as he gets and as tough as he is, he gives them that much of his soul. And that team is led by Cassius Winston, but that team, and you've been around them, Dan, for a long time, they're a close-knit group. The Michigan State kids are always a really close-knit group. And I don't know how, there's no manual. How do you move forward? How do you put in perspective playing a game and competing and winning a game? Do you get lost in the game so that it takes you away from the reality of what you're going through? And like Tom, a guy who's always coached his team hard, to find the balance of being demanding, challenging, but being sensitive to what everyone's going through on a daily basis. And then, like, this is going to be the first Christmas and the first game. And there are going to be so many things that are going to happen to this team along their journey. You know, it's Cassius's situation. It's Josh's situation, who is a spiritual leader of that team. Like, everyone thinks coaching is easy. There are certain things you just not prepare for. And I don't know how they're going about their daily business with Tom and how much he cares and how much the relationship he has with those kids and Cassius, because that relationship has grown through the years. And they've become really, really close. And then Cassius and his teammates. I mean, like, you're his teammates. What do you say on a daily basis? You know, Cash, anything I can do for you? You know, how you feeling? You doing all? No, he can't be doing all right. I just can't imagine what they're going through on a daily basis. Am I way off on that?
I don't know if you're way off, but I do think kids are resilient. I remember I had to tell a kid his father committed suicide, and The entire team rallied around him for that year. And then the next year, it doesn't go away, things like that. The next year, I learned this, that, you know, on the anniversary of the father committing suicide, the player quit my team because the year after is hard. So it stays. But I do think kids are resilient. I do. And I think that for Cassius, that'll never go away. But for the others,
how do you coach that team if you're Thomas?
How do you coach Cassius day to day? I just think you coach him. I think you're a little careful with Cassius. And I made a mistake, and Tom, and I was a young coach when it happened, but I made a mistake being too hard on the kid on a day that I didn't remember was the day his father passed away. But anyway, you just coach him and you go along. To me, that's what I think. I don't think I get it. I mean, whatever I say, I'm going to sound like a cold, heartless guy.
No, yeah, there's no wrong answer.
I'm listening to you talk, and I'm thinking about myself or others, and I don't know. I just think kids go on, and I do, and I think that you get competitive, and you play, and you practice, and, you know, Cash is probably fine during all that, and then when he, you know, got to talk to his mom, you know, it's probably hard most nights, but I think kids are resilient. I do, and Tom coaching the teams. Look, he's got – if we're going to talk about his team, I've told you from the get-go, I don't think they're a very good team. I think they'll win some games because of how tough they are and all that kind of stuff. But – and I think this definitely has affected Cassius. I don't know how it couldn't. But I think as you know, we move on and get through the holidays and get into the guts, I just think kids are resilient. I know you do too, Seth. I give kids a lot of credit, you know, in some areas. In other areas, I don't. But in those areas, moving on beyond something. You know what the one horrible thing is about our job? And you know, when you're coach, you deal with your guys, right? You deal with your guys. But I'm shocked at the stories that and the things that kids have had to overcome. I mean, I'm shocked by it. And, you know, you hear this story, that story. And it's like, my God, so many of these kids to get to play college basketball have had environments that are certainly detrimental to getting to where they got to, but they did. So I'm not going to say they'll be fine. I'm not going to say anybody will be fine, but I do think business as normal would probably be more the norm than not. Let's put it that way. That's how
I was giving some thought. I actually tried to reach out to Tom yesterday and missed him, but I was thinking that maybe Cassius needs to be challenged and pushed and coached hard while he's normal. In practice, because that's normalcy to him and to, you know, his safe haven of practice and the Michigan State basketball family. And what you just said about their team, like, and I was also thinking, look, you know who they miss? You would never thought it. McQuay. They miss Nick Ward. They miss Nick Ward, too.
Oh, they could use Nick Ward, yeah.
They miss Nick Ward's big body. They miss Nick Ward on the right block, shooting jump hooks over his right shoulder. Yeah, they miss him running down the middle of the floor some. They miss him, you know, they miss his five fouls. I mean, they miss 15 points. They miss Mac McQuaid. They miss Josh Langford. They miss, I mean, there are pieces. They miss Kenny Gorin's ball screen. I think we did a lot this year. We looked at teams and said, well, you know, I'm just using Michigan State as an example. They got so-and-so back. They're going to be number one. Well, we underestimated what it, and this is, again, goes back to my thing. People look at teams, they don't understand the chemistry of team. Matt McQuaid and his selflessness in his defense and Kenny Gorin's ball screen defense and, you know, through everything, you know, what exactly a guy like Nick Ward did. And you can go down, you know, throughout the country, like, why would anyone put Virginia in the top five preseason?
Man, why would they put him in the top 10 now?
Yeah, I mean, like Carolina, you know, again, we got coming back to Cole Anthony full circle. All right. They don't have a wing scorer. Like, they don't guard anyone. Like, when I played against Carolina for 9 years and then I played against Roy's teams when they were Kansas, the one thing is they weren't great defensively, but they made you uncomfortable. They made you react to them. They impacted the game, you know, with how their style of defense at times. All right. You know what? They don't impact anything. You're playing Wofford and you give up 43s knowing that Wofford 50% of the shots are going to come from three. You're not impacting the game. I mean, here's some crazy things. My mind works in bizarre ways, so I went and looked it up. I mean, this is crazy. You know, and then we talk about Carolina's transition game. They're averaging, this is crazy, they're 342nd in Division I and average 0.8 points per play in transition.
Hmm.
That's unbelievable. Would you ever think that you would say that about Carolina? That tells you they're not that good. They're just not that good. They're not an NCAA tournament team. North Carolina is not an NCAA. As much as we like Roy Williams and believe in his system and what he does and how he does it, and you know, they're not an NCAA tournament team.
When Ohio, let's get a junior update. When Ohio State went in and beat the living, you know, out of North Carolina, the great Andrew Dockage said, you know, I looked up in those rafters. And I was like, man, I remember that guy. Yeah, that guy. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. He goes, Dad, they don't have any of these guys. He goes, including Cole Anthony. He goes, you know, they just don't. And when you look at North Carolina's teams over the years, you know, even a guy like Luke May, it just becomes really good. I go back to Roy when he had a kid named Richard Scott playing in the post and literally at 6'5" beat the crap out of our Indiana team with Calbert Chaney. We're number one in the country and we couldn't play them. So I look at that team and say three things. One, they don't get the ball down the court and get in the secondary like Roy Williams wants them to do. 1A or maybe 1/1 is they don't have the same guys. They just don't have the same guys. And three, when I watch them play, I don't see the same devotion, I guess I would say, to the system that is Carolina. I just don't see the same. This is what we do, here at Carolina. And that's the worst maybe of the three. Because the one thing you don't want to get into is what Indiana's gotten into, where that, you know, Indiana doesn't know who the hell Indiana is and hasn't for about 20 years. And Carolina, you don't want to do that. You want to be Carolina in terms of athletes, in terms of recruiting, in terms of style of play. But I see them going, man, what do we do? Who are we? And that's never, ever, ever been the case with Roy Williams' teams. Ever. It's the first time I've ever seen it. It really is, Seth. Never seen that
before.
I'll
tell you who knows who they are. Gonzaga.
They'd be fifth in the Big Ten.
No.
Fifth.
Total disagreement.
No, I'm so tired of Gonzaga. They play one game every 2 weeks. Big deal. If they had to,
Coach,
I watch them the other
day. They got to win at Washington. They got to win at Arizona.
Every 2 weeks? Every 2 weeks?
Well, no. After Carolina at home, it'll be a lot more than 2 weeks.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm watching Ohio State play Minnesota, and I'm thinking to myself, I did a game at the whatever that thing is called in Gonzaga.
The cattle.
That's about one
it used
100.
To be a dog pound. It grew up. It counts a cattle.
All right. That's about one 100th of what Mackey is or the barn is last night. Or what I'm tired of Gonzaga. I'm not gonna lie. Yes, they should be in the Pac-12. Yes, Mark Few's a great guy. This isn't personal against anybody, but I'm watching them thinking to myself, you put Gonzaga in the freaking Big Ten where they had to play Tuesday night, Saturday night, one on the road.
I mean, like the Big Ten, first of all, Big Ten this year is incredible. I mean, like to me, I say this, I used to say this about the ACC. The games aren't games, they're events. I mean, it's theater, man. I mean, like the environments are insane. The coaching is terrific. The intensity and the toughness and the scouting and the preparation of what you're giving and what you're taking away. The players know how to play. I mean, like the Big Ten.
The best scouted league in the country.
The Big Ten is a joke how competitive it is. That like legitimately like Rutgers, I mean, how hard and how physical they are. About the only team that I don't have a handle on, is Northwestern. I think Iowa's, every time I watch Iowa, they're getting better and better and better. Offensively, that thing moves. They get a good shot. Garza is tough to play against because he pivots.
May I address that real quick?
Yes, I know he's your guy.
No, I heard about all this Hilton magic. Now, I played there as a player at Indiana, coached there as a coach at Indiana, and I went there and did the game Iowa-Iowa State. I got to tell you, it's the same thing. Hilton magic would be about eighth in terms of a big game in the Big Ten. Now, I know Iowa squashed everybody, but just because you got students behind the bench cussing doesn't make for like a great environment. I mean, truth of the matter is, Seth, it'd be about seventh or eighth in the Big Ten. I mean, people have no idea on a nightly basis how difficult, and Richard Pitino is going to join us, and he just.
Their place is insane.
Yeah, and I saw Purdue. I'm just telling you, Luca Garza, by the way, is, and I'm being legitimate here, get off my lawn guy. He is the hardest and the only player. I know you guys like Miles Powell and all that. Yay, Rob. But Seisler told me I got to work on my tone, so I'm going to slow that down a little bit. I'm not going to be so yay, right. Nobody in the country plays end to end every possession hard except for Luka Garza. I know every team has their favorite. I know guys are going to say, well, Ozubuki does or so and so does, and you hate us. And no, I don't hate anybody. But
don't add him, please. Don't add him.
But I get so tired of hearing this guy plays really hard. And then I watch the tape and you do the same thing. You watch it as a coach, not as a fanboy. And you're like, well, he don't play hard. He plays hard once in a while. He plays harder than most. Garza is the only guy that I have seen. Damn, he plays hard, Seth. He runs from offense to defense, defense to offense. He posts up. He gets a hell beat out of him and doesn't say a word. If you don't like Garza, you don't like people. Let me just say that. That's on you.
Day, he got his face all bloodied up.
Yes.
And he put himself back in the game. I thought he was a hockey player.
Yes.
I mean, Luca Garza should be a hockey player. I think that's my new line.
Luca Garza needs to get himself a mouthpiece. He better get a mouthpiece because he's going to lose all his teeth.
You know who he played for? The great Chuck Drizzell. Played for Drizzell's son.
I'll tell you this.
He called me to remind me, so I had to make sure we got that in the podcast.
He's been taught how to play. He has a father that sent him to Hawaii this summer. And I'm being literal here, Seth. He climbed up volcanoes, down volcanoes. He did all this medieval, like, conditioning that nobody, you know, most guys now, and this is from experience, most guys now need a trainer. They need a guy to rebound. I can't work out by myself. Coach Pitino
knows.
Cones
and chairs too. I had mad handles against cones. I broke those cones' ankles every time when I was back in the day. Five star, I could kill a cone. Couldn't go by anyone, but I could kick ass on a cone.
The only thing I remember about going to five star as a player is Chris Mullen beat me in front of every college coach in America. I mean, I didn't even know who he was. I'm like, oh, this ain't going well. What up, Coach Pitino? How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you guys?
I remember Coach Pitino making sure that we had all the balls in the whatever those things that Garf had. He had to collect the basketballs and put them in the containers, or Garf would lose his mind. And if I remember correctly, Richard, were you one of the guys that had to chase those suckers down and make sure they were all counted?
Absolutely. You know, I was coachable back then, and I'm still coachable now.
Hey, a couple things. I was just talking about this. Seth and I, the Big Ten is nuts this year, but I contend that the Big Ten is nuts every year, and places like your place or Mackey or even the RAC even or Illinois almost impossible to win in when you guys are going like you were last night. Talk about the environment before we get into Marcus Carr and the beatdown of Ohio State.
Well, I would say I've been in the SEC when I worked at Florida and, at Louisville, we were in the old Big East, I guess. And I don't know if like our league is the best, by any means. I think it's obviously a very good one, but our league is the hardest to win on the road. I think that there's a couple things. Obviously the fan bases really at every school, except for maybe one or two, are really, really into it. And they're going to go to the games. They're going to fill the arenas and they're really, really loud and they're on top of you. But the players are also really, really tough and smart, you know, so it's just a combination of great fan bases who really care and then just really tough to overcome it, because then you're not going to beat yourself at home as much as you would necessarily on the road. So we obviously, took advantage of a great home crowd and, we got to continue to do that to win in this league.
What you learn about your team the other day? I mean, besides Marcus going off, I mean, you know, every game you kind of say, all right, like there's, you set a standard maybe the other day of what you expect of him, but what do you learn from about?
Well, you know, we responded well. We played a tough schedule. I mean, it just kind of worked out this way. We've had three true road games and obviously we haven't won any of them. But I do like our team. We got seven new faces though. So it's still trying to figure each other out and still trying to learn from adversity. You know, we became significantly younger when Coffee went pro and when Curry got hurt again. You know, so there's a lot of new faces and we've been close. I mean, like at Butler, we were right there. At Utah, we were right there. Oklahoma, we were right there. But we laid an egg versus Iowa and we responded the right way. You know, and the biggest thing I told the guys, like, as you guys know, we wrote down about 10 things. I said, what went wrong at Iowa? And it was 10 things. It was transition defense. It was not communicating, you know, no flow offensively, blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, the most important thing is we didn't play hard the whole time. And when we compete, we're going to give ourselves a chance. I thought we finally did that.
Coach, I do want to talk about Marcus Carr for a minute because he did not play well at Iowa. Your whole team obviously struggled. Arturo played pretty good, but coming back, did you do anything with him? Do you have to do anything with him to get him going? Because he was out of his mind great the other night.
All last year, like when we were preparing for Purdue, and, you know, you're on the scout team, and I told Marcus, okay, you're going to be Carson Edwards. And legitimately, the guy was unconscious. He was like he was the other day. And I'm like, all right, let's just tell him to be Carson Edwards all the time. But he has moments in practice where he's unbelievable. But then he'll have some other moments where, you know, he's not great. And so obviously what he needs to do is work on that consistency. As a coach, you're like, okay, well, how do we get you more consistent? What can we do to help you? And I think it's just a confidence thing. He reminds me a little bit of the guard that we had a couple of years ago, Nate Mason, where he's shifty, he's crafty, he may not be like an above the rim guy by any means, but I think he's very similar in a lot of ways. And when he's going like that, really, really tough to stop. I think the key with him is playing at a great pace. At times he doesn't do that and that hurts him. But when he's getting into the lane and getting downhill like he did, I think he's pretty unstoppable.
You know, you talked about playing hard. It's interesting. We were just talking about Luka Garza and like, what is the key? And look, you've been around it your whole life and no team's probably played harder than your dad's teams, but what's the one thing in today? Like you say, all right, like I need to get this guy to play hard. What's the best way to get a guy to understand and define playing hard in your opinion?
You know, it's pretty interesting because I worked obviously for my dad for 3 years and, you know, growing up around him, you know, you kind of, I'm sure like your kids, like you don't want to listen to him anymore and you always want to fight him. Right. You know, and then I worked for Billy Donovan for 2 years. And the one thing I could say about my dad, like you said, there's not really like a play that I've taken that I loved or anything like that, or even this matchup zone, which I don't play, but his ability to inspire guys, to push guys, to get them to play hard. I mean, you know, I probably took it for granted, just watching it, working for it. I mean, that is very, very, a lot more challenging than people think. And I think you got to tell them the truth. You know, they may not like it, but you got to tell them the truth from day one. And you got to get them to understand that, you know, like we're all in this thing together. Now, I think there's so many people pulling at all these kids all the time. You got to get them to understand that, like, we're all on the same team and we all want what's best for each other. And if you play well, it helps us. It helps the team. It helps your careers, et cetera. So you got to be consistent, I think, and you got to lay the groundwork for what the standards are in the program. And you just got to trust it and you got to believe it. And I'm still working on it. I mean, I'm still a young head coach, but establishing that more than anything else is really, really important.
Hey, your big kid, Aturu, I saw him a few years ago and you told me he's going to be really good. Your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think he's just like taking the next step. You know, I don't think by any means he's arrived. I think he's learned, like, you know, going against Garza, like you play against Luka Garza, he just plays hard for, you know, 36 minutes or whatever that he's going to play. He ducks in hard. He runs hard. He's not a great athlete. He's not an above the rim guy, but he absolutely is a physical, his just sheer will to post you up. And Wesson was the same way. And what Daniel's been able to do is learn from those guys. He is very, very productive. You know, like Jordan Murphy was very similar in a lot of ways to Daniel. Like it may not be beautiful, but he's always filling up the stat sheet. And that's what Daniel's doing. You know, I think that he'll play in the NBA. When, I don't know. You know, I mean, I think he's got to work on his strength. But I just think NBA guys, when they look at his size, he's got the ability to knock down three. He's got the ability to go by guys, block shots, do those things. I think he's got a chance, you know. And he could still get so much better, too, which is great. He's an awesome kid, loves playing college basketball. You know, some of these guys are in such a rush to get out where – I think that Daniel loves playing college basketball for the University of Minnesota.
That's great. That's a great point because, I mean, like everyone thinks it's like a track meet instead of like getting lost in a moment and lost and getting better. It's not getting out. It's being ready when you get out, if you have a chance to stay out, you know, which is I think hard to understand. Now, are you guys done with finals?
We are right in the middle of finals. So I gave them 2 days off. I was going to practice today, but I thought, you know what, like, because we play again Saturday, we play Oklahoma State, and you're always nervous. I mean, when you're in the middle of finals and you're playing Ohio State at home, and you're like, oh, you know, our guy's going to be ready to go. It's almost, you'd probably almost rather play Ohio State than maybe like a bye game, you know, because your guys will be a little bit more up for it. But so we gave him 2 days off, and then we'll get back at it tomorrow and prepare for Oklahoma State.
Explain to people. I think this is a pet peeve of mine: the misconception of the, I don't know what social media or the gurus out there, of how much time coaches spend caring about what their guys are doing academically and helping them try to not only win games, but change their station in life through making good decisions and getting an education. You know, people think that Dan and I are walking around here saying, you know, get off my lawn. We're just two old men talking about basketball. Like, I don't think the average fan understands how much time you, your staff, meetings put into things other than basketball. Can you explain that to folks? Because it drives me freaking crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as you guys know, like, this is a very important time in their lives. And we're really, really, we work very, very hard to educate them because they are student athletes. They're also at a time where, as you guys remember and I remember, you're in college and you want to have some fun, you know, but you're not a normal student. You got to understand that. And there's more landmines probably in today's world for these college athletes than there ever was, you know, years ago. But it's an investment in just getting them to realize, because everybody's obsessed with the NBA because there's obviously so much money and everybody wants to get there. But the bottom line is not everybody's going to get there. So getting a degree is, it's non-negotiable. Like, if you don't get a degree, you're crossed off of so many lists of opportunities in the job place. But then getting them to understand, like, eye contact, you know, introducing yourself, saying please, saying thank you, all those things that we, you know, people think are like, you know, are given, but they're really not. And it means a lot to me. When you have players come back and they're good people and they're good fathers and they're good friends and they're good husbands and all those things, like, you've got to invest so much time into that. I mean, I think people see us on TV and we make great money and they think that's all that we're about, but you know, there's a huge investment in developing as people as well.
Oh, that drives me bat blank crazy when you hear coaches being criticized and since we're on the subject, clear this up for the masses. How closely do you follow, was it 20-hour a week? How closely do you follow that rule?
You know what? Honestly, I would probably say, I don't know if we ever get to it, to be honest, just because of the whole rest and recovery and all this and that. You know, I would say film is probably that, you know, because that's part of it. But I think on the court, because these guys are constantly getting up shots late at night, like, guys love to come back late at night. You know, so we stay under it pretty good. And you know what? I mean, that's probably paranoia from me, but also just an understanding of they need rest. But we don't hit it as much anymore. And I don't think, like, the days of practicing 4 hours anymore. Like, I worked for Ron Everhart at Duquesne, and we would have some, I think we had a 5-hour practice once. Like, we're not going very, very long. And I think that's kind of become the trend in sports. But yeah, you got to make sure you're on it, you're documenting it, and making sure that you're not going over it.
Yeah, it's funny. I talk to Coach Katie almost once a week, if not twice a week, and we get talking about, hey, what'd you do when you lost to us in like 93? Oh, I stopped the bus. I stopped the bus, went in the parking lot, and we had a practice. I mean, you know, just stuff like that. And now people think, well, you know, coaches are going over 20 hours. Hey, your thoughts overall on the Big Ten thus far?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think we caught Ohio State, you know, probably in an off night. I mean, we played well, obviously, but I think Ohio State is, they're balanced. They're well coached. I think Chris Holtmann does a great job. They've got an identity of toughness and physicality. You know, Michigan State, anytime you have Cassius Winston, obviously you're going to be right there. I mean, they've had some injuries, and I know with Cassius's brother and all that, you know, they're going to be a terrific team. Iowa offensively, now Jordan Bohannon going down, you know, you never know how they're going to recover, but Iowa can put up, you know, 80, 90 points on anybody in this league. So again, I think it's, you got to win at home. You have to find a way to win your home games and steal a couple on the road. And that's always going to be very, very hard. And, you know, fortunately we got one, but there's great coaches. It's great fan bases, and it's a fun league to be a part of. I've really enjoyed it.
Hey, Richard, last question. Your dad's back overseas. Is he enjoying that? I mean, I know he loves to coach. I mean, he was the guy we all wanted to be growing up, you know, growing up through Five Star and watching him do his thing and his, you know, his career path. And I mean, there were, about 8,000, obviously, Coach Pitino wannabes going through five-star, but is he loving it, or is it something you could say, you know, like he's coaching pro basketball? Cause like I said, the Knicks should hire him. I think if the Knicks want an identity, they should go and hire your dad. And you know what? I think that they would be back to being the Knicks. How hard is it though for you to follow him to follow you? I know how close you guys are.
Yeah, he's loving it, to be honest. You know, it's interesting about the EuroLeague, and I believe your brother is out there, maybe.
Yeah, he's been was in forever. Yeah, he's been in forever.
But the EuroLeague is like the NBA in Europe, and it's great basketball. And I'm able to watch those games, and they're great environments, great fan bases. They're great. The only thing I'll say is they also play in what's called a Greek league, and that, I think, is where the grind is a little bit, because – those aren't as big of crowds and maybe not as good competition, but you still play in those games. But the EuroLeague is fun. I mean, they got a game today. It's a little bit crazy. Like their fans are insane. And like they're playing a game today. I think it's Fenerbahce, and they're playing without any fans, because their fans last game were lighting fireworks and flares and smoking in the gym and doing all these things that they're not allowed to do. So they basically are getting punished, and now they're going to play in an empty arena today for a EuroLeague game. But he loves it. You know, it's cool to see, because I don't know about you guys. You know, obviously you guys are good at what you do on TV and the radio, et cetera, but he just loves the competition. And I think he just missed it so much that he didn't care where he goes. He's just, he's addicted to it. And he loves the being in an arena, coaching guys. And the EuroLeague provides that. So, you know, certainly he would love to be back here, whether it's in the pros or back in college. But this is the next best thing.
Hey, last thing before I let you go.
Sure.
What did you do? People ask me this all the time about coaches. You have a big win. Everybody's celebrating. Crowd rushes. What did you do the next 12 hours other than sleep?
After the game?
Yeah.
Well, so after the game, you know, it's funny, it's like you court rushed and the whole deal. And the thing I want to do more than anything is just sit in some peace and quiet. And we had a bunch of recruits, and they're all back there. And, you know, you can't speak to anybody anymore without a camera on you. So after the game, I legitimately sat in my office for like 15 minutes and just enjoyed some peace and quiet. And I went out to eat with my wife. But then the next day, I don't know, I probably watched our game about four or five times. I normally watch the TV copy, you know, if it's a good win, and just kind of feel it and enjoy it. And then I break it down. And that's really what I've done, you know, because you're making so many mistakes doing all those things. So, just evaluated the game and then, turned the page to Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State's pretty good, boss.
They're hard. I know. We got a really tough schedule. It's just been, one of those things where we played in the Gavitt game 3 years ago, 2 years ago at Providence College. So we thought we'd have a home game, but we ended up playing at Butler, and they're really good. We added a Oklahoma neutral site game. We had ended up playing Oklahoma State last year in U.S. Bank. So we did like a neutral site kind of home and home deal. So we got to return that. So it's been brutal, but I'll tell you what, like, it's probably beneficial now for everybody with the way this thing is going to play a tough schedule, because as much as I don't like that we're sitting at 5-5, the NCAA tournament selection committee only cares about the quality of your wins. So losing doesn't really kill you as much anymore. What losing does is it hurts your morale, and the fans get on you a little bit. The media may get on you a little bit, but if you're in the Big Ten, you know, you're going to have so many good quality win opportunities, much like, I think it was Indiana last year. They were on the bubble with like 15 wins or something like that. So, we could be right there. We got some great opportunities, and obviously Oklahoma State would be a quality win.
Congrats on the win the other day. Yeah, thanks for coming on with us.
Terrific. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks again, Coach Richard Pitino, for joining us. Before we move on, let's pause for a moment to hear from today's sponsor, Vivid Seats.
We all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band or being in the crowd to cheer on our favorite team. With Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program, you can attend the concert or show of your choice and earn credit towards your next live event. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all live events. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice, all in the Vivid Seats app. to make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back. All you need to do is use the Vivid Seats app to purchase tickets and start earning today. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. And when you make your next purchase, enter promo ESPN25 for a 10% off your next order. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater shows and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and join Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program today. And don't forget to use the promo code ESPN25 for 10% off your next order. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event.
Do you think that the NCAA committee is only looking at wins? Because I do. I think that.
But they, on the other hand, they look at bad losses.
Bad loss, no question.
Yeah, bad losses. Like a bad loss kills you. And you know, the net came out the other day, and we saw San Diego State at 3. We saw Kentucky at 57. Evansville, bad loss, killed them. Speaking of that, you got to validate wins. Like if you're going to win a big time game, you got to validate wins. Like one win doesn't define your season. And like, you know, like, my guy Chris Beard yesterday, he pulled it out. They're playing Southern Miss at home. They validated the Louisville win. Evansville has not validated anything. Stephen F. Austin has done a pretty good job with it. But, you know, as you go along, and when it comes to league play, it's different because it's within your league. There's more level playing field. Is it a home game? Is it a road game? I thought that, you know, Penn State, did a really good job last week, you know, obviously with a huge win against Maryland, and they validated the win. But to me, that's a big thing. How do you deal with winning? And I thought your question to Richard about, what do you do after a big win? Like, here's my thing. After a bad loss, it's you go to bed and you can't get out of bed. After a big win, at least you can get out of bed.
I always said this, after loss, you know, suffered all that stuff. And whenever I went to bed, whatever time it was, it could have been one, it could have been whatever. When I woke up, you know, in the middle of the night, and I had that split second where I then realized, oh, I'm sleeping on a loss. That was it. I was up. So it could be, I went to sleep at one, woke up to use the restroom at three, whatever, realized I had a bad loss, couldn't go back to bed. So I just got up. I mean, the first guy that I talked to about this was the coach at Penn State. It's either Bruce or Barry Parkhill. I think it's Bruce Parkhill was the coach there. And when I asked him, he was going to retire, and he kind of told us, I said, "What?" He goes, "Dan," he goes, "the losses kill me, and I don't enjoy the wins." And that was me to a T. I mean, couldn't function. And then, of course, had to make everybody around me miserable because I wanted everybody suffering as I suffered. So, a little peace and quiet, as Coach said, is great. And you move on and you get ready for the next one. And you know what? Good for him, man. They needed that. They got it. And they beat the hell out of Ohio State, Seth. They really did. So there you go.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. That was good. I thought he was straight up in that. And that's a heck of a win. In that lead, you're going to go through it each and every day. You got a great deal, man, because you're going to see – you got the best seat in the house for the best games all season.
I think so. I know there's a lot of Saturdays where we didn't, you know – but I'm going to do some ACC, but I can't wait to get started. I think we've got Ohio State at Maryland, our first Saturday game on the 7th.
Ooh.
Yeah, man. And that's going to be nuts. Look, I'm anxious to see what ultimately happens with Duke. I'm anxious to see what ultimately happens with Michigan. I'm anxious to see what ultimately happens with Auburn. I'm anxious to see what ultimately happens with Kansas, because if I were taking a futures bet, I would bet Kansas to win the national championship, and I'm not exactly sure why. I just think they're big, they're strong. Everybody's got a flaw. Their flaw may be fatal, the shooting thing. But I'm really anxious to see teams as we move through college basketball, Seth. Michigan got off to this great start. Michigan lost to a very good Oregon team. Lost to a tough environment. Same thing. Did you know the Big Ten is 13-0 at home this year so far?
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Crazy.
It's look, the league is great. I'll tell you, and we're going to have just more good games coming up, and we got good games coming up each and every day. I'm interested, like how does Carolina respond at Gonzaga? We're going to have all kinds of things. Now, I am going on record saying that Gonzaga would not finish fourth or fifth in the Big Ten, just so you know.
Well, it's you're right, and I'm right. Because we're never going to know who's
right. We're never going to find out.
So we're both right. There you go. Good for us. Yay, Rob.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get someone will make a comment on that.
Yeah. You know? It's all good.
But it's all good. Well, hey,
anything else?
Once again, World's Greatest Podcast doesn't disappoint.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.